Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Midtown Business Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Midtown Business Radio, where we put the spotlight on some of Atlanta's finest businesses. Stone, how you doing?
I am doing well. Excited about this segment. This is going to be a lot of fun, and we only have two guests in today's show, but that gives us a chance to really get to know them, and I think this is going to be a fun segment. First up on Midtown Business Radio, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Jack Perry. How you doing, man?
I'm doing very well. It's great to be here. You guys are wonderful, wonderful hosts.
You don't know that yet.
You don't know that yet.
I think you're speaking a little early.
I'm trying to be nice. Good morning. Good morning, you guys.
So what are you out there trying to do for folks, Jack?
Oh, what I do is I own a company called Source Point Coaching, and I'm a public speaker and a presenter, and I travel around the country, and I do a lot of talking with individuals and groups about motivation and talk about a life legacy messaging. And the life legacy messaging is about how we show up in the world, how we talk, how we integrate with each other. And the life legacy message, I get a handle on men and us and our anger.
Men have anger issues?
Really?
Never.
And it's a program that was born out of my relationship with my father and other people I've met on my tour in the military and also as a police officer.
Oh, so your background is military and police.
Yeah, it goes even further than that. But
What else?
I have a son, which is probably most important of all the occupations I've had. So I was a police officer for a while in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay, so that was the first thing, career?
That was first, and then the military for 30 years after that.
So now talk about how working as a police person impacted your kind of view of the world.
He saw the underbelly of society.
Oh my God. Did you? I don't know.
I got tired of getting harassed and shot at and stuff of people, and so I decided to do something
I'll do
safer.
Safer in the military.
Yeah, I did something safer and joined the military. And I did that for 30 years.
Is that typical to go from the police to the military?
I get that question a lot. Now it's just, I've never done anything like everybody else. I sort of do it backwards sometimes. So it seems to be working out okay. So nothing's perfect, but that's where I go where my energy goes and I go where my heart goes.
Now in the military, what role did you have in the military?
I was a combat search and rescue pilot, medevac pilot.
Oh, so you flew?
I was in the pointed end.
Yes,
I was a pilot.
So you were the pilot, and you flew what?
I first started out flying AH-1 attack helicopters, which anybody that's in aviation knows that I'm dating myself. And then I got a transition to flying UH-60 Blackhawks, and so I went into the medevac mission and flew medevac for 17 years as a aviator.
Now, do they not shoot at you when you're a medical pilot?
Yeah, I bet they do. That's when everything's
going
bad,
they're,
right?
They're not supposed to. However, historically, that has happened. Yeah, that has happened.
So now, how did you learn how to fly a helicopter?
I went to a little place down in Alabama called Fort Rucker. And any of you listening on the radio know that place. I give homage to that. That's they used to call it UCLA, the upper corner of Lower Alabama, down there in Dothan. in Dothan, Alabama, and I went through we used to call it the pressure cooker. It's a year long of flight school down there, and
Went from the police to be a helicopter pilot.
Yeah, crazy stuff, isn't it?
So that anybody could be a helicopter. You just say, "I want to be a helicopter pilot," and they're like, "Oh yeah,
you just put a quarter on the table and they play like playing pool. No, there was actually quite an assessment process that you go through, and mental, physical, background check, security check, and all that neat stuff. And then you go down to Fort Rucker, and a bunch of guys with funny hats and stuff get a hold of you. And next thing you know, you're in the dirt for a while, and you're doing a lot of push-ups and sit-ups. And then once you get through all that, then the next thing you know, you're on the flight line with a very aggressive and very stern professional instructor pilot.
And so you learned from scratch. You had no flying experience before?
Well, I cheated a little bit. I went and got my POTS license before I showed up down there a while back. And
okay, so you had flown an airplane.
And yes, that's correct. And a helicopter.
And a helicopter.
And a helicopter before you got to. So that would have been unusual. Yeah. You really did kind of.
So when you're in the cockpit and you're flying and they tell you something and you do it automatically, they look at you and go, "Where'd you learn that?" And go, "Well, I read it in a book."
The books are really good.
They're really good. They didn't have things like flight simulator and stuff back then, so I just did it. I wanted to be the best I could be when I went in there, and I did. And,
so now, how did this background of police, where you're serving the community, mm-hmm. now military, you're helping people that are injured, and impact your coaching?
That's great. It I look at it like this, is that everything I've done in the past has probably prepared me for where I'm at right now, including sitting here having this interview with you.
Would you like me to like fire shots at you to make you feel more comfortable?
No, please don't do that.
Throw things at you?
I'm still in therapy. Don't do that. Don't do that. And I say that jokingly, but I believe that everything we learn in our life and our experiences, like I said, you know, as a police officer or as a pilot and serving the military, and I'd like to also give a shout out to all our veterans that are out there listening, and also police officers, firefighters, and EMS, right. because we forget those too when we put people at service to our country. And so all of those experiences came together to help me find what I wanted to do. What I find as I got older, and especially when I speak and I talk to groups of people, a lot of people have a tendency to a kind of sleepwalk through life, and they don't know exactly really what they want to do, their passion. What is it that make you, what is it that feeds you, feeds your heart, feeds your soul, and where do you want to go? And I found that when I left the military, that's one of the things that I was kind of concerned with. I said, what is it that makes me, what is it I want to do, and how do I want to show up in the world, and what kind of legacy do I want to leave behind? So I said, you know what, I'm going to find out. So I started reading a lot, doing a lot of talking with individuals, professionals, people that we have seen on TV, and I asked for interviews, and I said, what made you good at what you're doing? And one of the things I had learned was, what's my legacy? What am I going to leave behind? What's my passion in life? And a lot of people really don't know what their passion is. And once you find that, it's like one of the greatest experiences in the world. And I found out that one of my passions is to get on stage, speak to groups of people, speak to audiences, and to understand what the life legacy messaging is.
But you talk about legacy a lot. How important is it for a person to look back and say, you know what, I'm doing this because I want to leave this mark. You know, I want to mm-hmm. serve this purpose. I want to be here for a reason. A lot of people, like you said, sleepwalk through. They don't, that's not top of mind. They're doing something. I do this because I'm going to make some money, or I'm doing this because right. I have to. My mm-hmm. parents made me do this. And they're not, you know, they're really not bought in. They're just kind of going through the motions of doing a career or, I mean, some people can work a job for their whole career and then look back and go,
what
did I
do?
I just killed time for 30 years.
And I've had that a lot. And some of my audiences, that's a great comment and a great question. One of the stories I tell is I had a woman a couple of months ago that I was speaking with, and I was doing an exercise in the audience. And it was a 2-day program. And then we had finished talking, and she came up to me. She's very gracious, very beautiful lady, very elegant lady, very professional. And she walked up to me and she shook my hand. And she says, Jack, I just want to thank you. And I said, okay. And she said, I realize now what I want to do. I'm going to leave my job. And she officially retired just a few weeks later. Mm-hmm. And because she realized that she had been doing the shoulds. I call it when people should on you. People tell you what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
You should be doing this, should be doing that. But really, when she got a chance and she looked in the mirror and said, what feeds me? What feeds my passion? What feeds my heart? What is it I really want to do? And she said, you know what? I'm going to go do that. And that gave her more solace.
Like you gave her permission.
She gave her, very good. She gave herself permission to do what she wanted to do instead of everybody else dictating what she is supposed to do.
Right.
And when you start doing that, and you start going through life doing what everybody else tells you what they think you're supposed to do, then you lose yourself.
But at what age do you think it's appropriate to have these thoughts about legacy? Because, you know, if every kid followed their passion, this world would be filled with cowboys and firemen, right?
Well, you know what? That may not be such a bad idea. Have you seen the news lately? that may not be such a bad idea. You know, sometimes you don't know what that is until and I like to say something traumatic or something very dramatic happens in your life. And then you back up and you go, man, what's going on here? And then
like you spent 30 years in the military.
Sure.
Like mm-hmm. that's not you, that doesn't just happen. 30 years is 30 years. That's thousands of days, thousands of times you woke up in the morning and did this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at some point you know, they kicked you out, right? 30 years.
Yeah, gosh. More than you know. Yeah. There's a time when and I've heard this from a lot of my retired senior people, even including general officers that I've worked with in the past, and that is, there's a time you know in your heart when it's time to go. You know when it's time to move on.
And then you wait 5 more years and then you move on?
Then you do it. You start putting you put a plan together. You got to have a plan. And you'll know, you'll feel it, and you go, you know what, there's something else I really like to do. And it's, and one of the questions, a very typical coaching or counseling question is, if time and money was not an issue in your life, what would you want to do tomorrow morning when you woke up? What is it? If time and money wasn't an issue. And you'd be surprised at some of the answers you get. And then people go, and I say, well, why aren't you doing it? Says, well, then they start throwing roadblocks.
Right.
They start giving themselves roadblocks. Well, I don't have this. I don't have that.
Right. Said, it's always some external thing.
Oh, yeah. It's like, and then you realize, well, really? I said, what did life look like? What would your legacy look like if you didn't do that?
Right.
And they go, well, I said, so just go do it. And of course, here in a radio show, saying that is a lot more to it than just saying that. Is, you know,
do you recommend taking baby steps? Like just
big time. What's, for instance, if you don't mind me asking, what's your passion in life?
This is my passion. I'm doing my passion.
Beautiful. See, and how many people do you know in your audience out there may not be able to say that?
A lot of them are not able to say that.
I went through this kind of awakening where I was doing something that I wasn't happy with and dreading it every day, and it was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, I believe in this. I like doing this, being a radio host. I chose myself and created this business because I wanted to be able to do this. And I didn't want to wait for someone to pick me to do this.
You bet.
I said, I picked myself and I created this business so I could do this.
There you go. So you created your own opportunity.
Right.
And so you need to be, and I don't mean to need on you, but you...
Don't shit on me.
Yeah, don't shit on you. Teach that to somebody else. That's an awesome lesson you just learned for yourself or other people. And I learned that as well. And sometimes, you know, without getting too out there with you, it's put it out in the universe and just, pray on it if that's the road you want to go, and ask for it and just see where it goes and just put your feet in the water.
Right. Well, I think, I mean, praying on it, that's great if that works for you. Yeah. I recommend doing something. Err on the side of action. My mantra was...
Welcome to my world.
Do more, think less.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot of people think this to death, you know.
Yeah, they do. They do. I've had people... you ever met somebody that can talk themselves out of opening a door? You know,
exactly.
Because they get outside because they can rationalize it to death. But all of a sudden, you said, you know what? If you just open the doggone door and go through it, you'd be surprised on the other side. And they go, wow, that really wasn't so bad. Duh. Yeah, yeah. Just all you got to do is do it. And then, without getting too deep, is that people, when you show up differently, when you want to do what you want to do, and you obviously you found your passion in life, I'm willing to bet there were some people that came around and said, that'll never work.
Yeah, you ever
seen those people? Oh, yeah.
They're like one
Eeyores.
Or two, honey.
Yeah, they're like Eeyores. They already got a dark cloud over their head. You know?
That's right.
No matter what you try to do, if you want to show up
It's easy to say no. Yeah. It's easy to not do something.
Yeah, then you waller in your own you-know-what, and then you just sit there, and then they're the ones that are going to sit there and pick at everybody else.
Right.
Because they're not strong enough to go look in the mirror and go, hey, look, this is what I wanted to go do. And then so... I call that victim thinking, that, you know, the chronic victim, the person that's always... they've always got something wrong. They want to find out what's wrong with everybody else, you know, like in teams or in organizations, whether it's corporate, whether it's military or where it's at. There's always somebody in a group or a team or a leadership role that, you know, unfortunately, because they look good on a resume, they're promoted or projected into an area of leadership. But they don't have the skills or the ability to lead other people.
Well, they rationalize, I'm the devil's advocate or I'm the realist.
That's coming from a place of victim. That's coming from a place of weakness, and that's a cop out.
Mm-hmm.
So sharing this kind of wisdom and experience and connecting with someone one on one or in a small intimate setting like we have here, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But you're up in front of crowds, and you're having to connect with them and share the message with a big crowd. Talk to that a little bit. Well, and I want to know, were you just as nervous as you could be the first time you stood up in front of so many people and tried to share these ideas?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You start breaking out in those sweats and you start going, am I really going to do this? And then you ask yourself this question. You go, what do you gain by not doing it? Nothing. What do you gain by doing it? And maybe you get an aha moment in somebody's life. Somebody out there can relate to it. So the question you asked me was, how do I do that? Well, first of all, I believe in what I'm talking about. I believe in the messaging I talk about, and I'm very well qualified to talk about it. And as I said earlier, that I was a police officer and a military pilot. But set that aside for a second. I was also a son, and I've grown up in this world. And I saw a lot of anger and a lot of frustration in different people's lives as I grew up, and especially in my father's, bless his heart. And and so I don't get on a stage, and I talk about authenticity. I don't get on a stage and talk to people about something I haven't personally tasted, touched, felt, or gone through in my life. And I'm not one of those people that get up there that read a book and says, oh, it looks nice, looks sexy. I think I'll go make money off of people telling me about it. Everything I talk about, I've gone through.
You've lived it.
You better believe it. And so it's like somebody reading a book about race car driving, and then all of a sudden they want to be an expert race car driver. Well, unless you've gone around NASCAR, you know, and done it, you know, that, so I don't talk about anything that I haven't been through or gone through in my life, including losing soldiers, including having an angry father and seeing anger in the workplace. And I've seen angry leaders. I've seen people that hide it, and I've seen how it can bring organizations and people down. So I guess what I'm saying to you is that those experiences and what I've gone through in my personal life have brought me to the point now where I can stand up with authority and tell you, let me tell you something. If you continue down this road, this is what's going to happen to your team organization. And I've read a lot of books, a lot of great books. Some of the most great thought leaders in our world is known. Everything from the Bible to books on Gandhi, Martin Luther King, to Stephen Covey, to great books and leadership. So Maxwell, Jack Welch, and you can read all those books, and they're fantastic books. But there's one thing you always have to know before you put any of that stuff into place. You have to know who you are. As a man first, and as a woman as well, before you try and lead or tell other people what to do. And sometimes it's hard for people to do that. And so when you step back and take the tough look at yourself and find out who am I, and you get there and you're comfortable with that, man, you can rock and roll, you can change the world, just like you did creating this radio station for other people.
Now, what types of groups do you speak to the most often?
My most often is small groups, churches, and I love corporate, and I've had some corporate clients, and I love talking to anybody that be willing to talk to me that would start the conversation.
Now, in a corporate environment, what is typically the topic? Is it about this life legacy?
Yes, it's life legacy, and it's also about productivity and also how to get a handle on your life and what things are holding you back from success, things that get in your way, maybe an addiction to a BlackBerry or addiction to your iPad where you're trying to have a conversation with somebody, but you're more concerned about your next email or text message that's coming in than having a one-on-one conversation with somebody.
Now, when you're trying to get this opportunity at a corporation, how are you working your way through the organization to let them know, number one, you exist, and number two, that the message is relevant to their business?
I get a hold of great radio stations like Radio X. I introduce
You don't have
myself.
To worry anymore.
Yeah.
That part of your job's done.
Yeah. And I have a wonderful PR person that works with me and a couple of great people that have backed me and support me, and they get me out front, and they put my name out there. They show my videos. I have a couple of videos that are on the internet and, of course, on my website. And can I make a shameless plug?
Absolutely.
www.sourcepointcoaching.com. Thank you very much.
So you do speaking, but you also do individualized coaching?
Yes, sir. I sure do.
And that coaching is to executives typically?
I've had executives and I've had a lot of personal clients, one-on-one. And I've actually had people that are
work with like former military and former police?
Yes, I have.
Is that a part of your business as well?
I can. Right now, I do not have any that.
So Lee's looking for the niche because he always says niches
bring you riches.
My niche is corporate clients and life legacy message on leadership,
mm-hmm.
and that is that and And predominantly, it's a lot to do with how we show up in the world and how we show up in the personal life and our corporate life. Once again, it's about anger showing up and how we show up in the world and what we want to, how we want to leave ourselves.
Well, this counsel, though, that you have for people and for other speakers, I mean, to some degree, any of us that are responsible for generating results with and through other people, we're professional speakers in our own way, right? I mean, we have to connect with our group.
Oh, yeah.
Share, if you would, just some of your insights. I don't know if it's tactics and techniques or if it's more disciplines and principles of how to connect with the audience and genuinely make sure that you're genuinely serving them.
Okay, great question.
That was a fantastic question.
Yeah, you did. You did a great job. If you're in the studios, ladies and gentlemen, you can see we're all doing high fives. Yeah, that was great. I connect with the audience. First of all, I always arrive at the venue early. I always make sure I know who the person is that I'm going to be working for, whether it's who the client is. Connecting, I always watch facial expressions. I watch eye movements. I watch breathing. I watch the whether or not they're going to disengage with me, the hand folding, the legs crossing, getting up and walking out. That's not cool.
That's
a bad time. I go, did I say something? And I also give, I connect with my audience by giving them real world examples, and I make myself vulnerable. When I'm on the audience, when I'm talking to an audience, I make myself vulnerable. I tell stories. I don't get up there and just start pouting stuff off, and I don't ever preach. I just get up there and I start talking from authentic nature. And I tell funny stories about myself, goofy stuff, And one of my favorite stories to tell is I argued with my GPS, on a late night. I was on a gig and I was being sent out, and I told my GPS what hotel I was supposed to be going to, put the coordinates in there, and I'm driving, and I get to the location. It says arriving at so-and-so, and I said, no, I'm not there. This is can't be right. And I'm arguing with it to the point where I wanted to pick up my cell phone and call the hotel and say, where are you located? And I actually did do that. And then I realized, I looked up out the window, and the sign was at the hotel I was supposed to be at. But in my mind, I was convincing myself my GPS was wrong. And so the point of that story is that you don't know what you don't know until you step back, know the facts, and relook at the situation again. That's a good connection with an audience. And like you said, we men will argue with the GPS, and sometimes, you gotta share those stories. One of the things I've learned over the years is that you can always tell the success and how well a company organization, I think, takes care of its employees. It's when you walk into the men's room and you hit that little magic button where the paper is supposed to come out of the thing. And if you only get a little bit of a slice of paper and you got to keep banging it to get paper to wipe your hand, then there might be an issue somewhere. But if you get a really long one, the company's doing pretty good.
Maybe some stock analysts can do that when they're doing research.
You got to connect with the audience, and I keep moving. I make eye contact all the time. And I relate with stories, and I tell real-world examples, and I always leave the audience in a safe place. I never leave them hanging, and I always give them a tool, something that adds value to their life. So when they're done,
so they have like kind of a takeaway that they can practically and tactically use.
Yeah, if you're having an issue, I'll give you one here. An example here in the studio is I like to use, and I copyright this, so don't anybody out there do this. Is that if I was to ask you, anybody in the studio, what would your theme song be? So, the President of the United States has his music, and some organizations have their music when they walk in. So if you walked into a room and you're having a bad, stressful, frustrating day, what music would you want somebody to be playing for you when you walked in there that represents who you are? Mm-hmm. So I get some pretty...
You got my wheels turning. I don't have an answer yet.
Yeah, I see.
By the next show.
Yeah, so just think about it. So the next time you're you're dealing with somebody that you're frustrated, angry, confused, or you're kind of ticked off, just start playing your song.
Play your song.
Yeah, sometimes when everybody's upset and angry, the Eeyores with the dark cloud over their head, all you got to do is play your song, and all of a sudden your demeanor starts to change. It will. You can't fight it. Your demeanor is going to change because now you're at your place, And mine is, since you were asking, I know you're getting ready to ask me mine, what mine was.
I was too worried about myself. I was afraid you were going to ask me.
That was great. Oh,
yeah, right? I wasn't even thinking about you.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that to you. Mine is, I love Jack Sparrow, Pirates of the Caribbean, theme music. Yeah, mm-hmm. Think about that. You know, the epic music, you know, and how cool that is. And so, you know, when you're having a lousy day, just start playing that in your mind, man. That's mm-hmm. that's a pretty cool place
to
be.
I have a theme drink. As long as we're talking about Captain Sparrow, I'll just go to the margarita, right? Just think margarita when things are getting rough.
Yeah, and then another tool that I used in connecting with an audience is smiling, you know. And once again, you know, like say you talk about the niche and said, you know, it's an angry man, you know, doesn't usually like to smile, you know, and they hold their anger, and they can't take care of themselves, and they're frustrated with the world, and they become victimized, and then they start to get into the conflict, and then they're going to make everybody else pay for their junk, and you've got to get people out of that. And so a really quick tool that I've used just a few months ago here in Atlanta was in Hartsfield International Airport. And I was on a late night flight, and I was tired. I'd been on the road like 4 days straight, and I was just frustrated. There was mechanical problems. The flight was late and everything, you know. And I, you know, and like that doesn't happen here. And and so I got off the airplane, and I was walking, you know, the people mover, and I was off the e-concourse. And if you know Hartsfield International Airport, you know,
yeah,
it's
far away.
Oh, you better believe it. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to walk all the way from e-concourse to baggage claim.
Wow.
I'm going to chill. It is. I guess it's like a mile and a half. I'm sure somebody from Hartsfield is going to call me and say, no. I say, well, great. Thank you very much for showing up. And I decided I was going to walk all the way from e-concourse to baggage claim. And you know what? I decided, I was listening to somebody one day, and they said, just smile. Even if you have to fake it, just start to smile. So I started smiling all the way from e-concourse all the way to baggage claim. At first, it felt uncomfortable. It felt kind of weird because it's late night and I was frustrated and I was tired. But I started to smile. I just put a smile on my face, started walking. And I started walking a little more. People started looking at me like, now, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the audience here, everybody in the room's smiling, you know. And so as I started walking, it became infectious. I couldn't stop doing it, you know, almost to the point where it was manic or anything. And I noticed that people were smiling back. And then I just kept doing it. After about 200 or 300 yards, I stopped, and then I just looked back, and there were people turning around, looking back at me, as this knucklehead's walking, this 6'5" guy's walking through Atlanta Hartsfield International Airport, smiling. And then after, about the first, 200 yards or so further than that, I just couldn't stop doing it, and it felt very pleasant, and it changed my whole demeanor, changed my whole outlook. And then by the time I got to baggage claim, I said, this is easy. All you got to do is just a snap, just like that, to change your attitude. Change your attitude. That's all you got to do is change your attitude. So back to square one, if you're not taking care of yourself mentally, physically, socially, you can take that into the workplace and other situations, and you can project that onto other people, and you're going to get in return what you project. So if you're a good leader and you want to be a good leader, get a handle on yourself first. I don't care how many books you read, but if you don't know who you are first, and take that tough look in the mirror, do the assessment, find out what your passion is, what your mission is in the world, then go forth and you will rock. And that's the way I look at it.
I can't think of a better way to wrap up the segment than
great.
That, except that I got to know, we going to add to this legacy of yours at some point? Do you have a book in your future?
Yes, I do, actually.
And you don't have to pay for this. This is a
He's pulling out his wallet. We actually did a fantastic job.
No,
I'm not. You.
Now, you guys aren't supposed to be kissing and telling on me here. One of the things I like to do, and I always, whenever I do a show or something, I like
to.
If
our listeners could see the wad in this guy's no, I'm kidding.
Hey, go. I'm going to get mugged walking out of the studio. Thanks. One of the things that, you know, on a real quick note, I always carry around a mission statement.
Huh.
You know, like a company's, you know, the big Fortune 500, 1,000 companies always have a mission statement. You know, what's their purpose and mission in life? And I decided I was going to design my own and my own mission statement. So this is what I carry around with me. And I carry this because if I'm involved in a situation, or somebody comes up, or I'm approached by something that doesn't fit me, who I am as a man, as a person, I always remember this mission statement, and then I walk away. May I take a second to read it?
Absolutely.
Okay. My mission in life is to leave a lasting legacy of peace and non-judgment, to teach all what I have learned from my poor choices and great successes in this life, to follow my passion and bring awareness to how important love and peace are in a crazy, unpredictable world. I choose to fear no man. I choose to love God and love all those that I meet on this journey, regardless of how they show up in this world. I choose to continually learn and be open to all new ideas, empower those around me, and to give back to this world and teach the world just how important every child is to us all. And I choose to question everything. Thank you, guys.
Good stuff.
Wow. You guys, thank you. Yeah. It has been an absolute delight having you in the studio. We got to have you back.
Sure, anytime.
There's more to talk about because we got to talk about that book. I don't want to hear about what's standing in your way, right?
Oh,
I don't know, maybe come back with a client or something, talk about
that. I got some people who rock your world in here. Oh, yeah.
All right, so what website one more time before we wrap?
Yes, www.sourcepointcoaching.com. That's for Jack Perry at sourcepointcoaching.com. You can get me on Twitter at sourcecoach. And thank you all very much. You guys have been awesome. It's a great show.
You going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Oh, you better believe it. I'm hooked. Thanks, guys.
So, Lee, this next guest, I asked this gentleman three times how he pronounces his name.
And you forgot?
He got it right every time. And I'm just going to roll the dice. I am going to throw my hat over the fence. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast with the Ignition Project, Jim Ekman?
Yeah, Eckstein. Not even Eckstein. Close, man. Eckstein. You're not even in the ballpark.
All right, I want you to read mine.
That is not even close. All right. Eckstein.
Eckstein.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, it's...
Jim Eckstein, hey, we're so delighted to have you.
Hey. I should have jumped in and bailed you out.
Now that was my name. We can move on. That's good stuff. By the way, I'm just glad you guys are going to put me on the same tape as Jack because now there's like actually some credible value there, as opposed to what drivel I have.
I don't know about that.
Let's learn about this Ignition Project, man.
The Ignition Project is, it's our attempt to bring early stage companies together with what we call entrepreneurs turned angels, guys who have kind of been there and done that, founded, built.
So which one are
companies.
You, a been there or done that?
I'm a been there and
done
that.
There. It's not an or.
Where Jack had 30 years of like real, in the battlefield. Right. I would just been in the battlefield of early stage companies, which is.
So you have some scar tissue too, I'm sure.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. It's all good.
So now, what do you think that a person who is an aspiring entrepreneur,
right.
what's a misconception they have?
Which one? How many you want to know?
In their head, they think life is a certain way because they got this figured out.
Here's the truth about aspiring entrepreneurs, right, is they are so naive, life is good. You wouldn't start your own company if you actually knew what was going to happen to you when you did.
That's why there's not a lot of accountants that are entrepreneurs,
exactly,
right? Because they can do math.
That's right.
And that's not good, right?
I can't do math, but that's not good. Yeah, you need those people to be successful, but at the same point,
you don't want to lead with them. They shouldn't be out front.
That's right. Yeah, it's tough to do sales and marketing and accounting. That's a tough job. Yeah.
So now, talk about the Ignition Project. So what are you guys trying to do?
Sure. So in Atlanta, we think there's this market that's kind of, early stage gets a lot of support, a lot of things going on at Georgia Tech,
Yeah, we just had somebody in here from Georgia Tech, research, and there's Flashpoint,
ATDC,
and there's ATDC, there's
kind of
Hypopotamus, there's Tech Village, there's a lot of...
So startup, which is kind of like I'm thinking about a product, and I'm thinking about a team, and I'm thinking about a customer,
right?
A lot of support here. What we see, though, is before you get to $1 million or $2 million in revenue, there's a gap. Right, so you get all this money in startup, or you get all these friends in startup.
So pre-revenue, there's an opportunity.
Pre-revenue is it's taken
it's
care of.
A little bit of revenue is where there's a problem.
Yeah, where there's a little bit of problem is I got a customer, right?
Right.
I got a product. I got the beginnings of a team.
Now what do I do?
Now I need to grow like crazy, right? And that's what my investors who gave me early stage money or startup money thought I needed to do. Go grow fast. Well, it's kind of tough because most of these guys, they've never been there and done that before, right? And so you say, okay, go hire a team of 50 guys and go do that. And they're like,
where am I going to find Craigslist?
Yeah.
Where am I get these guys?
What do I do with that? What's your second product? you mean I have to have two? Where are you going to get the capital to do all this? The banker? I have no idea, right?
Right.
Gets to be that way.
So you're trying to fill that gap.
Trying to fill that gap that's kind of, somewhere just past startup, but before venture capital would be willing to talk to you. And venture usually won't talk to you unless you got $1 million in revenue and generally, a good team and a good product and a good customer base. All right. And so there's this, huge early adoption gap that people talk about.
So now how do you find these companies that are in that?
I call them early stage entrepreneurs, ESEs, and they're out there all over the place. Actually, in 2008, when the economy tanked, I had many of these folks show up at my door, and it kind of gave me the idea that somebody needed help. And then, like Jack, I feel purposeful about what I do and intentional. You know, I built and sold four companies from 94 to 04. What does God want me to do with that stuff, right? Well, I could go sit in my office at home and think about it. I could be an investor and act like I know what I'm doing and tell people, you know, I'll give you my money or I might not give you my money, but actually helping with the intellectual power I have, with the gifts I've been given,
right,
that experience, that wisdom, it's huge. And
Cause,
so,
because sometimes you need help, but sometimes you need a helper.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. And it's, you know, and I mean real help. I don't mean just kind of like, you know, every once in a while. I mean a guy who's willing to, like, give you a cell phone number, you know. When you're running an early stage company, a lot of things come up real time. They don't. You know, have 2 or 3 weeks.
Right,
to think
they're
going to
wait till my quarterly meeting.
Yeah,
right.
It, you know, sounds good.
You
but
could be,
like,
out of business.
I got to go talk to the customer in 10 minutes. Can you please tell me what to say? Right. So it's, you know, these folks in 08, a lot of folks showed up. Matter of fact, you know, somewhere between kind of 08 and, you know, the fourth quarter of 12, I had almost 350 businesses show up. 350 guys in this
350.
Kind of state.
350? Yeah. And it's just you, or you have a whole team?
Nah, it's kind of was just me, but I'm a guy who people know, and mostly through relationship and faith, or relationship and doing guy stuff, or relationship and doing business, but there's a bunch of folks out there that know me or know of me. And so they call me up and they say, here's my situation. You know, in 08, everybody was like, here's my situation. My banker doesn't love me anymore,
right,
and I'm about to be out of business.
Here, I need 100 grand.
In 10, it was, you know, we need to go. Things are good. The product, you know, the customers finally like it. It's taken off. What do we do? What do we do? You know? And so, you know, it's not hard to find these folks. They're out there. They're excited. They've got good ideas. They've got good concept. They've actually, you know, kind of climbed the first Everest. You know, they got a product. They got a customer. Someone actually bought the idea that they had, right?
Right.
You know, I was meeting with a fellow business associate this morning. She told me, she said, you know, 9 out of 10 startups fail. And I said, in what land? Because where I come from, more like 99 out of 100 fail, right? And so these guys have already made it there. So they're the one that survived.
Right.
Okay. And
now, what do you call surviving? Like, how do you know that if you have something, or, you know what, it's time? Because that's one of the decisions. You don't know, right? Like, you don't know if you're close or you're a million miles away.
Yeah,
a lot
and
of
we
times.
Do, and we do. By the way, in Atlanta, we do a terrible job at killing companies. We should kill them much sooner than we actually do. And you know, killing's not a bad thing. That means people get to go on and have a new life and do new
Stone
things.
Stone calls it freeing up your future.
That's right, creating opportunity. That's it, right? But no, how do you know? You know when you have the point of kind of break even on profit, right? And it doesn't have to be a lot. You just have to kind of break even. Now, most early stage companies are going to get advised, including by me, to take everything they make and put it back into the company, right?
Right.
Invest in yourself, right?
Sure.
It's the best, you know, best investment you can place. And so what you see is, you know, you get to a kind of a break even point, and they say, you know, we can grow at kind of 1 or 2 times sales on our own cash. But we could grow at 10 times sales if we got a little capital, right? But I've only got $500,000 in revenue, and venture capital didn't want to talk to me just yet,
right?
Or, you know, the other side of the coin is, you know, I've been $200,000 away from break even for 8 years now. What do I do, right?
That one you might, it's time to pack it in.
Well, it's difficult to tell. I mean, it's, you know, not all things are based on one attribute, right?
Sometimes
you got to look at 100 attributes to figure out what's going on. But in either one of those situations, the owners of these companies are faced with these difficult decisions of kind of, you know, do I pack it in? What do I do? Where do I take money? Can I go talk to a banker and get a $250,000 loan and change my strategy?
Yeah, because bankers are usually up for that, right?
Yeah.
With no revenue or little revenue,
exactly.
No collateral.
It's great. Yeah, and the regulatory environment is awesome.
Yeah, here's a check.
Trust me on that. It's just
pull out. Oh, here's some cash I have in this drawer. Take that.
Well, and so that's the part of the Ignition Project that's important, right? Angels, guys who, you know, like myself, you know, entrepreneurs turned angels, right? Guys who've been there, done that, and now have capital and are investing it back in the marketplace. We understand these things, right? We didn't grow up in commercial banking. We grew up as guys like them,
right?
And so we can understand a little bit more of the risk, and we can also bring all those things that we've been given to bear, you know, with them and say, look, you know, I've been here and I've done this a couple of times, and let me tell you, right here, if we did that, maybe things would change for you. Maybe things would get better for you. And you know what? I got a little capital. I got some buddies behind me. Got a little capital. We might be able to solve that problem. You know, the banking environment's tough. No raising money's tough. No, you know, venture capital doesn't want to talk to you yet. But I might have a team of people with intellectual capital and financial capital here to help solve this problem.
Right. But there's also different types of money, right? There's smart money where I might be giving up some equity in my company, but with your connections and with your skill and knowledge of the marketplace, you can fast forward my growth, and it's better to have a little bit of something than a lot of nothing.
That's right. And I bet, you know, most early stage investment like this, right, is The brains are worth far more than the capital. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can tell you time and time and again that $1 million, you know, it helped, right? But what three relationships helped was substantially larger than that. Right,
that maybe without the money, those relationships would have been worth more than the money.
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, I often talk to folks and they're like, you know, hey, we need $1 million. I mean, what are you going to do with it? Well, I have no idea, but I need $1 million right now. You just give me $1 million. It worked
I'd
last
have peace
time.
Of mind.
Yeah, last time a guy gave me $1 million, it worked great. I spent it, and now I'm here, and I need another million. Right? It's like, okay, what are we going to do with it? Well, let me tell you, I can put three guys around a table. He might know something good to do with it.
Right.
But there are already a lot of these groups around. Like, we've gotten to meet a lot of them, had several of them come through the studio. You got the Startup Riot and the Startup Lounge and the Tech Village and the ATDC. And the
Gathering of Angels. There's Ty Atlanta.
Right.
There's lots of mentoring. What makes your place different?
Okay, so I think those guys mostly focus on startup, right? Most of those companies those guys deal with don't have a customer yet, and they're helping them to get a customer, and that's a good thing. By the way, more is better, right? To build a community in Atlanta, build an ecosystem for these early stage companies, we need more, not less. Okay?
Right.
And so we're all in favor of those guys. We support those guys. We know those guys. We love those guys, right? We think, though, they kind of stop at the point in time. A lot of times they're done with their job once they get the guy past startup. Okay, you got a customer, you got a little team, you know, you got a product, good news, good luck, call us when it's all working, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's justified because they figure the guy should take it to the point that if he needs more capital, venture would be interested in him.
Right.
But a lot of times guys just don't get there. And, you know, one of the things that Atlanta's really known for is these kind of like non-sexy businesses. You know, Atlanta is the city of the most unsexy businesses in the world.
And that's
right?
kind of the problem of why we're not recognized nationally, I think.
That's exactly right.
That nobody has that big commercial like Groupon or Twitter. Like we have these kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah, like Home Depot. Who'd have thought hardware stores were cool?
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But I mean, it's that's real, right? I mean, and they're real big, good businesses, right? And so those businesses, because they're not sexy, have the most difficult time crossing that gap because when you're trying to talk to people and get them excited, they're going, you know, it's just not really something I'm excited
My
about.
My kid doesn't have that app on his phone,
that's
so
right.
I'm not interested.
Yeah, why would I want to do that anyway?
Right.
You know? So if we can help those companies, right, and we can add, you know, us to the ecosystem of these other great folks that you've mentioned that, you know, they help the startup community here. And by the way, you know, once beyond us, the venture capital community here is pretty strong, got some good names too. Certainly in the Southeast, we can cover a lot of capital. But, you know, right there in that niche, we think there's a gap for us, and we think there's some folks we can help educate and grab them along in life. And
so let's play out a scenario. You have a company that has that first client or two and is maybe, you know, built up a little community, and they just haven't been able to scale yet. I guess that's your sweet spot, right? That's where they've proven the concept. That's what you want to see, right? Proof of concept. And then see some potential down the road that maybe they're either undercapitalized or maybe they don't have the right contacts to get into a channel or something like that.
Right.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely.
So now here you have this thing. So now say I'm that entrepreneur. What am I going to have to give up to get on? First of all, to get on your radar, I'm sure that's not super difficult, but I still have to meet you and get to know you. And this is we'll give your website out a little later. Right. But so now I meet you, I tell you my story. You're like, okay, that sounds intriguing. What's the price I'm paying for getting you involved in my venture?
Okay, so the Ignition Project started as just an event that we did actually October 8th here at ATV, Atlanta Tech Village. Again, we build the community, not, you know, you don't need to be independent, build the community. And at that event, we had 8 companies come to present. They did an awesome job.
So it's like kind of a speed dating thing where they're up there for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, or?
7 minutes.
7 minutes.
They got 7 minutes to pitch to about 20 angels that were there that day, right? We call it kind of a demo day, you know, where you're not really allowed to ask for capital anymore in a public space.
Right.
But so everybody was just demoing their product and telling everything that was going on.
I exist. This is what I do.
That's right.
And then
so
if
you
somebody wants
guys,
to talk to me later, that's on
what
them,
happens.
Right?
That's what happens, right? And so, but, you know, prior to the event, you know, perhaps and most importantly is for at least 6 months we worked with these companies to prepare
so that
them,
they're not
right?
just winging it up there with some
PowerPoint. You know, and one of the things you start with is a financial model. You asked earlier about kind of how do you know if he's not, you know, if he's going up or he's going down,
right?
Well, if you can put together a financial model that says the potential for long-term recurring
revenue.
It's
a hockey stick. That's what everybody likes.
Exactly.
Just so you know.
Exactly. And you work.
I'm sure he's glad to get the counsel from you.
Now, I didn't know if you knew that or not.
That's
a hockey stick.
Everybody
loves the hockey stick.
But we couldn't support the Thrashers. What's up with that?
I
don't know. Anyway. No, hockey stick's what you want. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, you know, because we had these folks prepared, one of the comments we did get back from the angels was that, you know, we've been to many demo days, but by far these guys were the most prepared group of folks to stand up in front of us, right? And I think this is the important part of the, you know, where the brains comes into play, right? There's a lot of guys out there who can walk around with a pitch deck and throw stuff on the table. I've seen a ton of them. You know, very few of them have actually been kind of coached into doing it the right way. And that's not to sell something that you don't have. It's just to know what to sell. You know, investors are looking for a very specific thing. Products are cool, but I'm looking for an investment, not a product.
Right.
And I want to know long term what my opportunity is as an investor, not just, you know, that you got a cool product. There's a lot of cool products, right? But how long do they last in companies, and how long do the companies that support them last, right?
Right. And you're looking at it through a different lens than the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur has, you know, put their blood, sweat, and tears into this thing, and you're looking at this in 7 minutes and deciding, hey, is this something I'm intrigued by or not?
But that's the cool thing, I think, about the Ignition Project, right, is nobody in that audience, all the angels in that audience had been there and done that before.
Right.
So what you can know as an entrepreneur sitting on that stage in front of us is all those guys out there, they've been there and done this before. Now, that makes it pretty much kind of like a pressure cooker, because a lot of those guys are going to be thinking, well, I did that, and that's a stupid idea. Right? But on the other hand, a lot of them might be thinking,
well, it's going to resonate.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you get some, like, institutional people that maybe their grandfather made a lot of money, and now they got a little less money than the grandfather had.
Exactly.
And they're deciding on some, you know, in an ivory tower of what's a good idea and what's not, based on nothing more than theory.
Exactly. Angels come from all over the place. They come from corporate America. They come from family money. They come... But, you know, this group, we want to focus just on guys who kind of been there and done that. And again, you know, in times that are bad, it's likely that an entrepreneur who's been there and done that recognizes those times and can empathize with them, right? As opposed to just say, well, how come that happened? How come that you didn't close that sign? You lost that client. What happened with that? Well, you know, anybody who's been there and done that has lost a client, and so they can relate. You know,
right.
They can see eye to eye with this guy. And that's incredibly helpful in the communication that's got to go on to make companies successful.
So now, is your time spent building these events, or what's a day look like for you?
You know, quite honestly, I came up with this idea in July. We did an event in October.
So July, this past July?
Yeah, like
just a few months ago.
Pulled the trigger in a hurry.
So taking action.
What did he say? Didn't he say, like, don't stand around, you know,
right,
taking action, do something about it?
That's, yeah,
I think they're all, you know, I'm totally on that page.
Right. So taking action is an important quality you're looking for in an entrepreneur, I would think.
Exactly.
Less theorizing and more data points.
Right.
So you did this event just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, we're going to do another one in the spring and probably do it twice a year.
So you're taking a few months off then?
Yeah, what we're going to do is we want to build kind of credible guys again, right?
Uh-huh.
So we're going out and we're finding those early stage companies right now that we think we're going to prepare for the next event in the spring, right?
So what'd you do with those 350 companies?
Well, I invested in three of them. And as you know, an entrepreneur, if you're out there, if you're an early stage guy, understand that, you know, angels would love to look at 350.
They're not ATM machines,
they're
right?
They're not ATM machines, and the likelihood is really, really low. But again, the likelihood for success is really, really low. And, I mean, that's kind of a personal thing to me as far as why it was only three. I found three companies that I could help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, not just with my capital, but with my intellectual
with
stuff,
your connections,
you know,
and
ability.
Your
yeah.
So I want to get some real life counsel here, and I'm asking kind of hat in hand because I was looking at the guest form that was turned into us.
Mm-hmm.
Not only does it clearly say Jim Eckstein on it,
yeah,
it actually has in parentheses pronounced Eckstein. But if we could forego,
we're building this app that teaches people to be radio hosts.
Exactly. Yeah, I get it.
Okay, we get some money for that.
I really do want some counsel here. Purely hypothetically, let's say you got this neat little media company that has a good, solid, small business, making money, making folks happy, serving the community. What kinds of things should a company like that do? What should Lee and I do before we ever go knock on your door? Before we ever. There's probably some homework. There's probably some stuff we should do to get our own house in order before we ever start going
approaching
out
and
trying to,
like
approach
an angel or
somebody like that, right?
With money if we were to need money.
Yeah, well, and so first to answer, I think the Ignition Project and I think the Angel Advisors, my business that I work with, right, that's kind of their purpose, is to get you ready before you go ask for money.
Hmm.
Okay, you know, come to us now and we can help you get to that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But what should you have? A good deck, right? Why do I care?
His deck needs to be condemned. Is that the deck you're talking about?
Why is it big enough to care about, right? That's one of the biggest answers. A good financial model. Show me how money comes in. Show me how money goes out. Show me what's left
over. But does it have to be something like the world of technology is like you spend a lot of money, you build something, and then a gazillion people are going to use it, and then you don't have to really build anything anymore. Is that the only model that venture or angels are interested in?
I think venture, you know, has its own segments, that verticals that they're concerned with, right? Each venture company that you go talk to, they're interested in certain verticals, certain type of investment. Angels can be vastly different and have a there's much greater spectrum. I know guys in Atlanta who want to invest in things like heating and air conditioning companies and car dealerships and things like that. I know guys who are in Atlanta that want to invest in, you know, what they call cash flow businesses, laundromats and car washes and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an investment return kind of philosophy, right? I mean, a lot of us angels, we put the lion's share of our dough, thank goodness, you know, somewhere safe and protected with an investment manager and a guy who actually knows how to invest.
So you're not just investing only in angel type companies.
That's right. And so we'll take a much smaller portion, hopefully, right, and put that in things that interest us or things that drive
that
us.
That you're passionate, right, about.
That's right. And in, you know, in the angel land, it's very much about the entrepreneur or the, you know, the investor's passion as well, right? So he's trying to turn something around. He's got some beliefs, you know, real estate, all kinds of folks out there in the angel land.
And that's important for the entrepreneur to know, to make sure that you're matching yourself up with somebody that's aligned philosophically, right, and in terms of what you're trying to get out of it, and so you don't waste people's time. I mean, you can bang on a million doors, and if they're only interested in healthcare and you don't have a healthcare problem, you're going to just be rejected time after time.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I have a client right now, Adam Houtman, runs a company called Vault. What I know is a little bit about marketing services from days when I did direct-to-consumer marketing in financial services land, right? And Adam's got this product that is, you know, there's not really anything healthcare about it, but everybody calls it a healthcare product, right? Mm-hmm. And what Adam is essentially doing is making sure that the doctors who are about to throw your stem cells away in the garbage can, right, instead take them and store them for you should you ever need them in the future,
right?
You know, people ask me all the time, they say, Jim, I thought you were a geek. I thought you were a tech guy. What are you in that for? And I'm like, look, that is a total pitch to a consumer, and the more consumers you get, the better off you are.
Right.
So, you know, even as a guy who everybody thinks is a tech guy, I look at stuff that's, you know, different all the time.
So what's next for you?
Oh, Lord, I got to go home and face my four children today. And,
you know, you got like a new event coming up?
We'll have a new event in the spring. Keep an eye open for that. You know, working with some angels right now and trying to, you know, improve this process. I think the best thing that happened with the Ignition Project, the initial event, is we did get some angels to come out of the woodwork who have been there and done that. And to the extent we can get 15 to 20 of those guys in Atlanta believing in the ecosystem, believing in developing, you know, the commerce of this great city.
And so you're just trying to build community around this underserved group.
That's right.
Really the mission for you guys?
That's the mission. Yeah, exactly right.
And
bring them together.
And so if people wanted to learn more, their website?
Theignitionproject.com.
And then your own advisory?
Theangeladvisors.com.
And either one will get to you, right?
Either one will get to me. Or check me out on LinkedIn or tweet me at XJAE.
XJAE.
See, I put that X in there for next time.
Look, we have an X too. You'd figure he'd remember that.
We get it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. Thanks so much to our guests today. We will see you all next week on Midtown Business Radio.